Thanks for waking up with WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Greetings and welcome aboard WKOK Sunrise. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Rob Center is always our fabulous producer, so he launches into a new week. It is February 4th, 2019. In the studio, Judy Grissel is with us. Welcome aboard.
Thanks, Mark.
Psychology professor from Bucknell University, neuroscience expert. I read everywhere that that is a true statement. Have your master's from the University of Colorado and your doctorate from Colorado, and you are considered an expert in neurobiology and what else? Chemistry? Addictive science? Is there such a thing?
Yeah, sure, there's an addictive science. So I spent 7 years in grad school learning about the environmental factors that influence addiction, and then I spent another 3 or 4 years doing a postdoctoral fellowship where I studied genetics and addiction. Now I do research on mice to understand the predisposition for those who have a risk for addiction and those who are maybe more protected from it.
All right, you have a book coming out on the 19th, Never Enough, The Neuroscience and Experience of Addiction. The neuroscience we can dig into. Tell me about the experience of addiction, please.
Well, many people are familiar with the experience either directly or from their family members. And I guess in a lot of ways you could say it's inexplicable because certainly not rational behavior that an addict engages in. And I'm interested in particular in how the choice to use transfers into eventually a habit and then a compulsion. And then, someone is compelled to use in such a way that they ruin their relationships and compromise their jobs and their health.
And can people break addiction?
Well, sure. There are people all over the place who've overcome an addiction. I'm one of them. I was homeless and had been kicked out of several schools by the time I was 23. And I haven't picked up a drug other than caffeine and occasionally a cigarette in about over 30 years.
All right. Well, fantastic. So you're clean and sober. That's fantastic. But give me another quick glimpse of your using days and then the resolve that came out of it.
Well, I first got my good drink, maybe my best drink, when I was about 13. I had enough to realize that this felt wonderful. And in fact, I felt like I was kind of normal for the first time. And for the next 10 years or so, I never said no to a drink or a drug. And as a result of that, I pretty much lost everything. And by the time I ended up in treatment, which was kind of an accident, I actually thought I was going to a spa. It was a long time ago, so I wasn't aware of treatment centers as I am today. But anyway, I ended up there and saw the nurses, so I realized it wasn't going to be quite as fun as I hoped. And it wasn't fun, but I then went to a halfway house, and then I guess I was able to see, without the drugs in my veins, that my life was a pretty big disaster. And that helped me get willing to do the necessary hard work of facing myself and taking advice, I guess. And I think I did have a little side plan, which was to solve addiction.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, you know how people who are addicted are pretty darn motivated and persistent. And I think those attributes can come in handy. And so for me, I needed something to do with my kind of compulsive energy. So it was convenient, I guess, to start paying attention in school. And so I went back to college. It eventually took me 7 years to graduate. But in my last year or so, I finished in psychology, and then I was able to convince someone to let me into grad school, which was amazing. And my goal was to solve addiction so that I could use without self-destructing. And I got a big lesson in humility and also in the amazing complexity of the brain, and so realized gradually that it wasn't going to be quite that simple.
So do you know yet if we can solve addiction? You haven't yet. You may eventually. can it be done?
Well, there are so many people who overcome it, as we've said. So I think it's solved maybe in a way on an individual basis, although I guess a real solution would be one in which I could drink like a lady, or at least some semblance of that. And I, as I said, I haven't had any. So,
well, women binge drink more. You report about that. So which ladies are you talking about?
Yeah, no. Well, I'm talking about the, I guess, the old-fashioned kind of sip on a
in
glass.
In moderation.
Of, yeah. I'm not a really moderate person. It's an interesting question mark, because I think, you know, diseases are of all types and varieties. It's, you know, if you have cancer, that's a disease, but sometimes that's caused by a single tumor. And if you could get those cells out of your body, you would be well. Well, addiction is really caused by a complex constellation of ways of thinking and feeling and behaving that probably involve most of my brain or a large portion of it. So I'm not as hopeful that we'll be able to extract those factors without, you know, sort of lopping off my head. But I do think that there's a lot better drugs coming down the pike to help people. Suboxone is a great drug for opiate addicts, and Chantix for cigarette smokers who want to quit. So I think that we are gaining understanding and things are improving. It's certainly, you know, changed a lot in the last 100 years.
So as a scientist who has a tremendous amount of respect for the different drugs that you're dealing with and what they do, we're having a big argument about whether we should legalize pot. Some states have done it. Pennsylvania has a couple sentences into that debate right now. What should we do about pot? You write about it as though it's one of the drugs that to which you can become addicted.
Oh, it's certainly an addictive drug. Any psychoactive or brain-acting compound that changes the way we feel and gives us pleasure is potentially addictive. I'm kind of agnostic on the issue of whether or not it should be legalized, and partly that's as a result of my own experience, where whether something was legal or not was really pretty irrelevant, and I think that's true for most addicts. I just don't think that legislation is an effective strategy, as we can see by the very failed war on drugs. We've spent so much money trying to stop people from using, and I just don't think that's likely. On the other hand, if it is legal, it maybe suggests that it's safe, and that's certainly not the case, especially if you're young. I'm really strongly for education and for understanding what these drugs do to your brain, and so that people could make more informed choices.
Now, some people say marijuana is a gateway drug. Well, if I'm hearing you right, and I know the only thing I know about addiction science I've learned in the past 8 minutes, so marijuana might be a gateway for some people, depending upon where they are on this labyrinth of complexity.
Yeah,
of drugs.
That's a great question, and I'll say I was quite skeptical in the beginning. I remember when there was an association made between smoking cigarettes as a youth and becoming addicted to anything later on, alcohol, opiates, stimulants, and I thought, maybe cynically, that's ridiculous, because people who are inclined to smoke cigarettes, for instance, or inclined to smoke pot, might be also inclined to try cocaine or opiates. So it might be a coincidence rather than a causal relationship. And that's always a tough scientific concern, I guess, parsing out what's causal and what's not. However, we now have the experimental studies that demonstrate that taking drugs that are addictive early in development, especially during adolescence, as I did, is likely to change the brain in such a way that those drugs become more appealing later on. So, for instance, if you drink alcohol or smoke pot during adolescence, you need more of a opiate, let's say, at 30 or 40 than you would if you had never tried it. Your brain is somehow insensitive to those rewarding drugs, so you take more, and if you take more, you're more likely to become addicted.
Okay, so for some folks it might be a gateway drug, and for other casual drug users it might not. It just would, it depends on everything.
Well, it depends on everything, that's true, but I think that it's clear that if you can use as a luxury, then you're probably safe. But luxuries become habits, and habits become necessities, and necessities become addictions.
Okay, so we'd have to be careful about that. All right, well, we have to take a quick break. We are 10 minutes into our interview. Judy Grissel is here. She's an expert in neurobiology and chemistry and genetics, a Bucknell psychology professor, and she does a lot of neuroscience research to this very day, including inspiring one local high school student. So we'll talk about that research a little bit. Your publicist, Mr. Mike Ferlazzo, showed up from Bucknell University, so we appreciate him coming in today. He's helps make sure that we know about some of these good professors. You have a book coming out, Never Enough, The Neuroscience and Experience of Addiction. Mike's going to make sure you got a book signing somewhere around here, so he'll tell us about that when the time comes. So we will be right back on our interview.
This is WKOK Sunrise, on your station for the best news, talk, and sports. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Rob Sender, a fabulous producer. Over in the newsroom, Matt Catrillo is there. He says Front Street and Sunbury is very slow, and Route 11 northbound very slow, getting past an accident in front of the middle school in Danville. So we'll keep you posted about those slowdowns. In the studio with us now, Judy Grissel is with us. She's a Bucknell psychology professor, a neuroscience expert, very familiar with all aspects of neurobiology, chemistry, and genetics, and has authored a new book. It's coming out very shortly, Never Enough, The Neuroscience and Experience of Addiction. It'll be out on the 19th. There will be local opportunities to find out more about it in our region. We'll tell you about those a little bit later on. Describe the book, if you would, please, Judy Grissel.
Sure, Mark. The book is meant to be a guide to help people understand what's different about the brains of people who go on to become addicts before they begin using, during the time that they're becoming addicted, and even a little bit after. And it goes through sort of general processes of addiction as well as the effects of individual drugs. So the middle chapters are, you could sort of pick and choose if you're interested in psychedelics or in THC or in alcohol, then you could sort of pick on those chapters.
You're an addict before you're addicted?
I want to say, let me clarify one thing. I wouldn't say I'm an expert on all aspects of neurobiology and chemistry and genetics. I think probably nobody is, but I've spent the last 30 years trying to understand those things, and I know I've learned quite a lot. George Kube, the head of the National Institutes of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, has said that you can either be born an addict or an alcoholic or become that way by using a lot.
Oh, so that's helpful.
Yeah, it is helpful. And what I think it suggests that's quite true is that we have different risk. You know, at the time we're born, we've known for a long time, for instance, that the risk for addiction and alcoholism runs in families, and that the closer you are genetically to someone who is an addict or an alcoholic, the higher your risk. It's not the whole story, though. Certainly, picking up is necessary, and so there are many factors, including the early age that you use. We talked a little bit about that earlier. So if you're during adolescence, then you are increasing your risk quite a lot by picking up. But if anybody who uses any mind-altering drug often will become dependent on that drug.
For whom would this book be a handbook?
Well, I think it would be useful for parents and loved ones to understand what's going on in their family members. I also think it might be useful for healthcare providers and counselors and physicians who want to understand their patients or clients, maybe for law enforcement officials or judges. So anybody who wants to explain what's going on or better understand what's going on. It's really quite an epidemic. We have recent research suggesting that about 1 in 8 adults are drug dependent, and that also 1 in 8 children are growing up in a household with a drug dependent parent.
And you talk in this book not just through about science, but you talk about experience. The title, Never Enough, quoting another drug user who said there'd never be enough cocaine for you and him, right?
Yeah, this was a good friend, a boyfriend, and unfortunately he died trying to get enough, so that's mentioned also somewhere in the book. But they say you have to kind of hit bottom, and this was, I had about a 6 month bottoming out, and it began really when I got the wrong bag from a dealer that I was supposed to share with someone, some Midwest state. And anyhow, I was homeless at the time, but my friend Steve and I checked into a cheap motel in Deerfield Beach, Florida, which is where I was living around, and we used as much as we possibly could. And he said, you know, there's never going to be enough. This was sort of when the bag was running out. He would never say this in the middle. And I thought at the time that I couldn't quite understand his point, because I was really just determined to keep trying to fill the void that was getting bigger and bigger the more I used, which is sort of the way it goes. The more you take of any drug, the more the brain adapts to that drug, so the more you need to take that drug. And I didn't know any of that at the time. I just knew that, he just knew, really, that we would never get enough. But as I said, even though he got clean shortly after I did, he later relapsed and died with a very high dose of amphetamines, and a house burned down around him.
All right, so that is the worst-case scenario for an addict, but there are lots of people who are able to claw through this, yourself included, and some go on to excel. How many people break that cycle and go on to a productive life?
Yeah, it's really hard to know the numbers about that. Most of us don't, so that's pretty clear. The chances are slim. I've heard that your chances of surviving brain cancer are higher than your chances of surviving addiction, or at least not dying, you know, as a result of your addiction. It does take quite a lot of years of life and good things about life away as you slowly die.
What an apt analogy then, too, if genetics is sort of foundational or certainly influential in addiction. Let's talk about the genetics of our brains, or I guess our whole bodies. What increases our propensity to addiction?
Yeah, so great question. When I went to do my postdoc on genetics, it was right around the time the human genome was being cloned, which meant we would have the sequence of all the nucleotides in the genome. And we all thought that having that sequence would enable us to understand what was different about addicts and non-addicts. So we thought, for instance, we'd take 1,000 people who were clearly had drug problems and 1,000 people who clearly didn't, and just look at the differences in their DNA. And we've done now thousands of those studies, and the results are unbelievably frustrating. It turns out that the genetics are not that prescriptive. So what they do is increase or decrease the risk. They change the way we respond to the environment. And there are hundreds of genetic factors that have an influence. So finding one is like finding, you know, a piece of hay in a haystack, not even a needle, that has an influence. I study endorphin, and it's just one of hundreds of factors, but it looks like people who are prone to alcoholism have lower than normal levels of endorphin before they ever pick up a drug. They don't know this, of course. They've inherited it, but they have this low levels of endorphin, and alcohol stimulates the synthesis and the release of endorphin so that they can self-medicate this deficiency. What that means is that if somebody prone to alcoholism in this way and somebody not, both have the same amount to drink, the one prone is going to find the alcohol really wonderful because it fixes that sort of deficiency, and the other one will probably think, well, that's okay.
All right. And so genetics is a factor here. And our through deep addiction, our genes don't change, but our DNA does. Tell me, elaborate on that.
Well, all of our experiences, especially potent ones like using drugs or stress or our diet or our early experiences, can alter the structure of the DNA. They don't alter the DNA sequence of nucleotides, but they alter the structure, and that's called epigenetics. And it now seems clear that epigenetic changes in the genome as a result of taking drugs, especially if you take those during development, can be passed on to future generations so that the offspring of animals that are exposed to marijuana or alcohol or even nicotine are much more prone to use those drugs and others, and also more prone to anxiety and depression.
And so when you're talking about drugs, let's say legalized marijuana, this thing pops up, you warn about how dangerous for individuals with this genetic and this sequencing of DNA are, that certain drugs are dangerous for them. Marijuana, alcohol, cigarettes, THC, which is in marijuana, not psychedelics. What do you call them?
Psychedelics.
Yeah, that's the word. Okay.
Well, I think that drugs have a different kind of risk, and it depends what the danger that you're speaking of is. So some of them are really bad for the brain. Ecstasy and stimulants in general at high doses are pretty bad toxins. Opiates and THC are not so bad for the structure of the brain, or I shouldn't say not so bad, not as bad as alcohol, and that's a legal drug. Nicotine is more addictive than THC, probably. I think, though, that the danger is in altering our sensitivity to pleasure and our sensitivity to reward, and in altering really what matters most to people. And I think that's really dangerous for lives, especially for young lives.
All right, just a moment left. What can we say about our current opioid crisis?
Oh, there's a lot to say, I guess. I think that better understanding of how the brain adapts to opiates will help people understand why an addict cannot get high and yet is compelled to keep on using. And I also think that treatment and compassion go hand in hand.
All right. Well, there's so much more to say about this. Please come back. The book comes out on February 19th, Never Enough, The Neuroscience and Experience of Addiction. Judy Grisel, a Bucknell psychology professor. She'll be at a function on campus being held by students April 18th. The National Institute of Drug Abuse will be there, but the community will be invited. It'll be on campus. And Mike Ferlazzo, who serves as producer helper for this interview, will tell us lots more about that as that approaches, so we'll know more about it, and you'll be present.
I will. Thank you very much, Mark.
You bet. Mike hasn't set up your book signings yet, but he's clackety-clacking away on the phone, so there'll be one before you know it. Thank you again so much.
Thank you.